Quiet your mind.
Ever since the Earth has circled the sun, there have been fantastic tales of wonder and mystery that the faint of heart dare not discuss. But brave, uninformed souls have the brass to tackle every extraordinary happenstance, from the modern age to the dawn of Mantis.
Welcome to Dawn of Mantis. I realized on the way over here that I've been messing that up every week because it's not a variety podcast. It's mysteries, true crime, and more.
Oh.
So I apologize for the last few weeks. We changed that and I wasn't on board with it. I was on board with it, but I wasn't.
I'll give you a pass because for 3 years it was a variety podcast. You know, so it's going to be hard to break
it. It's a habit thing, right?
I think he even messed up that part too because I think it's true crimes, mystery, and more.
I can't even fix my mistake correctly. Sorry about that. Welcome to Dawn of Mantis, true crime, mysteries, and more. How are you guys doing today? I'm Ivan. This is Joe, and we have Sam.
Yeah.
Here as well.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
I looked in the mirror today.
Yeah.
And I noticed on the bridge of my nose, a coarse hair, about a quarter inch long, just sticking out there.
Yeah.
And
what did you do?
I cut it off.
You cut it? You didn't pluck it?
No.
Okay.
I don't like pain.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That would have hurt probably.
But it's one thing I always remember about my dad was he always had several hairs there. And that's so I think, you know, I'm coming into that stage where I've got kids. They're too young to give me grandchildren, but I'm growing into my papa body where less hair on top. Yeah. But more hair on the bridge of my nose, my back, coming out of my ears. I'm going to be that skinny papa. Like, I'm all skinny except for just this weird distended belly. I'll be that kind of papa. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably going to wear suspenders. Like, I'm planning it all out. But it's already happening. I'm already morphing into that papa, the papa body.
I'd say embrace it right now. Go get the suspenders.
Yeah, I don't care.
Just go with it. That way, you know, later on you have... It's not like a shock to anyone. It's, you know, it's like it begins now.
Yeah. A long time ago, I knew my dad had a friend who he was a pawpaw too. He had a pawpaw body and he wore suspenders and they looked like measuring tape. They were like yellow.
Seen those before.
I'm like, that's going to be my gig when
I
get
that. And then you could
age.
Always unbuckle them and measure something
on the fly. Just don't stretch them.
Yeah, that's true.
As you measure.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to. Like, all my cabinetry's not turning out well. It's like, it's not the stretch. It's the condensed version. Yeah, okay.
So that's where I'm at. Sam, how you doing over there? Sam looks like his brain is just on fire.
As I was listening to you tell your story, I was opening up my laptop to get it ready, and it didn't connect to the Wi-Fi immediately. So I was making sure it was turned on, and when I opened up my network connections to find my Wi-Fi... I see everyone else's networks that are all around me, and there are some interesting names out there that my neighbors have came up with.
We're about to find out a lot about your neighbors.
Yeah.
The funny things they put as their little Wi-Fi names.
For sure.
Yeah.
And we're going to go in alphabetical order. So we're going to start off with Goldilocks, nice. Happy Campers.
Cute.
Mama Bear, Cute. Papa Bear, Pooh Bear. Pooh Bear Guest, and Porridge. So I don't know if that's a lot of routers in one house or if there's just a lot of neighbors doing some funny stuff that I don't know about.
It's a lot of bears in one house.
Yeah, maybe I should change mine to the Big Bad Wolf.
Oh, you should. I don't know, what's something anti-bear would be funny? I don't know.
Yeah, Pooh Bear didn't have any adversaries on there.
That's
Tigger
true.
Was a friend. Eeyore was a friend. I guess he was just depressed. But there was no, like, nobody out to get him.
I feel like Eeyore was kind of misunderstood. I feel like that, I think there's an episode, if you know your Pooh lore.
said Pooh lore.
Yeah, where basically he was like... you know, he wasn't depressed. That's just how he reacts to the world. Hmm. And he just doesn't get super excited about anything. He's just
kind of like Dexter.
Oh, the Dexter's Laboratory?
No.
Oh.
Dexter from...
My Laboratory.
I was still on cartoon.
Me too. No. I thought him too.
You jumped to serial killer.
Yeah.
No, you're good. Yeah, I get that.
So was he or a psychopath?
Well,
and just didn't kill anybody because he really couldn't.
You'd be sad too if you had a tail thumbtacked into your
that's
ass.
That's true.
Yeah.
There's a nail or a thumbtack holding that. It is. There is. Isn't there? Is there not?
Yeah, I think there is.
Yes.
I think there is.
Okay.
Okay. This one's clever.
Oh, there
back,
we go.
Back on the Wi-Fi networks around here. This one's clever. Silence of the Lan.
Oh, nice.
I like it.
That is good. The next one, Spank Me, Step Bro.
What? No.
Yeah.
You're not serious.
Spank Me, Step Bro.
Oh, I got to turn my hotspot off.
That's strictly for Pornhub. That is bizarre. Spank Me, Step Bro.
Yeah.
Okay.
Golly.
And then we have Tofu. And then Untrusted Network.
Okay. Untrusted Network.
And then the last one, Wrong Hole.
That might be in the Step Bro household.
I think, yeah, Spank Me, Step Bro.
That's a dual band router.
Wrong Hole are both, and that's out of the same house.
Well, it could be with all the bears, too, though.
Ooh. You know what, Sam? You live in a swingers neighborhood, and you didn't even know it. Something bizarre is going on around here.
Well, I can't partake.
Call the Google voice line. Tell Sam what he should change his router to battle these other routers.
Well, mine's the upside down. You know, me and the kids were big fans of Stranger Things. And so I was like, oh, we'll make ours the upside down. And
yeah. Now, I like
now it. There's this whole network of people out there that I was unaware of.
The Wrong Hole. You're going to be looking at your neighbors like, are you the Wrong Hole guy? Which one? Who is that guy? Who's the Spank Me Step Bro household?
He's a signal strength of 2 bars. So he's a little ways away, but
the Spank Me
Step Bro is 3 bar signal strength. So he's closer.
I guess if we really wanted to know, we could like walk and like triangulate.
True.
I'm going to make a guess that the house with all the Christmas inflatables, that's Spank Me Step Bro.
Man, that's a ways down there.
Is it?
Though.
Is it? Oh, okay. All right.
That's what I don't understand. I could just be in my garage and lose my Wi-Fi signal. So, man, these people, I need to find out what kind of routers they're using.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds really powerful.
What if he gets like an expert to come out and it's like a scene from a horror film where he's like, the Wrong Hole router is in your own house.
It's coming from your house. Hey, out there in Dawn of Mantis land. Call us up and tell us your funny Wi-Fi router name. 417-462-6847.
Ivan used to have one called Abraham Linksys.
Yeah, and nice. John Wilkes Bluetooth.
That's and cool. Pretty Fly for a Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
What do we have this time? Part 2, right?
Yes.
We left off on a part 1-er, didn't we?
Sure did.
All right.
I will do a slight recap.
That's fine.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Basically, in part 1, we met Betty Gore. A lovely housewife whose husband's name was Alan, and they went to church with another couple, Candy and what was the guy with her husband's name? Can't remember. It doesn't matter. We only mentioned him like twice. But anyway, you'll know.
Yeah.
So Candy's kind of a richy housewife who gets a little bored, and you know she gets the itch and looking for a scratch. So she finds Alan.
That's a recap.
That happened.
That's a re-slap.
And basically, they have an affair, and then, you know, Alan kind of feels guilty after a little while, wants to break it off. That's kind of where we are, summed up, you know, an hour and a half in 1 minute.
Yeah, but they all did it in a way where they can still feel good about themselves, right? Because they kind of planned it out where, like, we're not going to have the affair today. We're going to do it December 10th.
Yeah.
At noon at this hotel room that we're renting by the hour.
Yeah.
Or motel.
Third-rate romance.
Yeah. Third-rate rendezvous. If we plan it out, it's not an affair. It's not adultery, you know.
So, yeah, Alan wants to break it off. You know, his wife, Betty, has just had this baby. And so where we left off, actually, and where we're picking up, they went to a marriage couples retreat.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That was weekend long, and they were going to try to reconnect, and it did. It, like, worked. It worked so well.
All right.
So that's where we begin, is they're coming back home and from this thing, and their marriage is on fire, and they made sweet, passionate love inside that creepy hotel where they went or whatever it was, and mm-hmm. and they're just, you know, everything's firing on us, and Alan's so happy.
But. It couldn't have worked too well, because here we are in a part two.
Yeah.
And there hadn't been any traditional Dawn of Mantis blood talk, you know?
No, that's all coming in part two.
Okay, all right.
Betty Gore. And one of you said last time she was aptly named.
That's, yeah, yeah. I think so.
So yeah, Alan's coming back, and then he's on a high. He's like, this is great. We're gonna go back to the house and restart our relationship. And then he remembers, oh shit, Candy.
Oh, I'm in another relationship.
He's not talking about the Halloween kind.
No.
No, he's not. But it was just as sweet.
I don't know.
Maybe it was. I don't know. All right. So they're on their way home now. The Gores drove back to their home, a changed couple. But as Alan rode the high of renewing the flame in his marriage, he also was filled with a deep sense of dread. Like I said, he had to face Candy now. But in two ways. First off, he literally had to face her and get their kid back. Remember, she had kept the kid while they were gone. Mm-hmm. More importantly, he had to let her know that it was really over between them. As Alan walked up the path towards the Montgomery home's front door, he felt nauseous. Candy met him there, looking extremely concerned. As she handed him... See, when I wrote this, I was under the impression that she had kept the baby. Later on, I found another account that she had kept their older kid, who was like almost a teenager.
Oh, okay.
So let's just say as he received the child back.
Okay.
I don't know which kid it was.
Yeah.
She asked anxiously, as you can imagine, let's picture it, how'd it go? Because she wants to hear him say, you know, I went through the motions and just whatever. Nothing happened.
Yeah.
Alan said... It was really good for us.
Oh.
She said, quickly, what does that mean? I don't know, Candy, Alan said. And he grabbed the kid, walked back to the car. Right.
How do we know all this word for word stuff? Did Al retell the...
Aunt Candy a lot as well.
Okay.
Yeah. They kind of came out about everything.
Oh, okay.
Like at trial and afterwards.
Okay.
Yeah. They both admitted to the affair, to the police, and... Pretty much walked the police. That's why it's so detailed.
Okay.
Yeah, gotcha. I found, yeah.
I can't remember if we covered that last time or
I don't
not.
Think we did.
Okay. Good question.
It was September by this time, and Alan and Candy, they did meet again about a week later, but no sex was had. Alan told her all about the encounter, the marriage encounter, what it had done for him and Betty. He told Candy he had to devote all of himself now to his family and that he could not continue doing anything that would take his focus off of them. But as usual... He just couldn't seem to say the words, and so Candy finally did it for him. She said, and I quote, Alan, you seem to be leaving it up to me, so I've decided I won't call, I won't try to see you, I won't bother you anymore. The two parted ways, and Alan really did throw himself completely into his marriage and family. And while Candy returned to her home and to Pat, that was that sumbitch's name, Pat. It was...
Yeah, Joe doesn't like Pat.
No, he was a fine gentleman.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. I get you.
It was only half-hearted, you know, her return to him, to say the least. She soon started going to a place called the Currency Club in Dallas, where she met a tall, handsome guy with a mustache named Richard.
Okay.
The two exchanged numbers, and soon Candy found herself in yet another affair. But this one was very short-lived. Richard soon became rather possessive and would get really angry if she couldn't meet up with him, so she broke things off. Ironically, though, it was around this time that her husband, Pat, discovered her affair. Not with Richard... but with Alan. He found an old love letter from Alan, and Candy had to come clean about what she had done. Mm. However, Pat mainly blamed himself for her actions. He told her that he was sorry for always working, being distant, and not paying enough attention to her, and he forgave her. The couple even decided that they would also try the marriage encounter, the same one that Al and Betty had tried.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it was a fun weekend getaway, it was nowhere near the life-changing experience that the Gores had been privileged to see. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That, I didn't know what that was a stupid way to end that sentence.
Well, how many therapists does it take to change a light bulb? Have you ever heard that joke?
No.
No, only one, but the light bulb has to want to change. But that's a joke, and it's Jesus. A bad joke. It's bad. I get it. But it kind of lends to that, like, if they don't want to make it better, it's not going to get any better.
Exactly.
Yeah. So they're...
Here's the deal.
That's the reason why I told that crappy joke.
No, it was a great. I laughed. That was not a sympathy laugh.
Yeah. Okay. I appreciate that.
here's what's crazy. These folks, and like this same scenario that we've been talking about and that we talked about on the first episode, it plays out all the time where you get this he or she and this couple in this marriage or relationship, one of them is not fulfilled and they feel like they're drifting away and they're not really happy anymore. But then they bump into someone else that's married feeling the same way. What's funny is those two people then will put such a huge amount of effort into an affair or running around or seeing each other or all these things, right? If they just would have put that same effort into their respective marriages, right, they probably could have fixed them. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Or at least been a lot happier. It's just so strange how that works.
Mm-hmm. It's like trading your car off because the alternator's going out. It's like you can replace your alternator.
Yeah, you can fix it for just a little bit.
Yeah.
And you and that car have been together a long time.
Yeah, but that new truck is shiny.
It smells so good when I get inside. That was weird. No, I didn't mean it like that. I really didn't mean it like that. That was creepy.
Leave it in.
But no, I mean that. And I know what I'm talking about because, listen, when you go to AA or when you go to like a drug rehab, you don't want the counselor to be someone that's never even touched a drug. You want to talk to somebody that's been through the shit.
Yeah.
See, so I can kind of talk about this stuff. Yeah. Having made some mistakes and stuff myself, I kind of know what I'm talking about here. So I'm saying if there's anybody in that position, if you just put all that huge effort and all that you're putting into whatever that you think is exciting for a second, but it's, trust me, it's not going to go down a good road. Turn that around and like try to see your wife or husband or girlfriend or boyfriend or whoever. Put that energy back into them. And at least give it a shot. You know what I mean? Maybe try to, you can re-spark or rekindle something with them. There was obviously something there at some point because why did you get with them? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's like the different light song. The I see you
in a different light.
Yeah. Is that about a married couple?
Loving I can't remember. Your eyes. I don't know. It's just, the song is basically a girl walks in the office and he just sees her and then he remembers pounding her the night before.
Oh, is that how?
Yeah, because he says, I see you in a different light.
Oh, so my reference was...
Just the way I saw you last night.
You're right. Is that Doug Stone?
Yes.
Oh, I think so, yeah.
Here
we go. There's a reference.
That's on our playlist. That's why I know all the words right now.
Yeah. It's a good earn.
So yeah, Candy and Pat go to the same retreat. Doesn't work out that well for them. After that, things go quiet on both sides for about 9 or so months. Then, and this is the Dawn of Mantis part of this two-part series.
Okay.
Then came the day that would change everything.
Oh, no.
June, Friday the 13th, 1980.
I'm now, because you used that voice, I just instantly became audience.
Oh, okay.
And not right. host anymore. I'm okay. just like, I'm ready. I want to know what happened. Sorry.
I'm
supposed to be working right now.
I'm going to try my best, like Bill Curtis / I don't know, who else is a really famous, like Forensic Files, you know, Cold Case Files narrator.
Yeah, I love all of them.
Candy had a lot to do that day, and her first stop was at the Lucas Methodist Church at about 9 a.m. It was the last day of vacation Bible school, and she was driving her kids there, along with Betty and Alan's daughter, Alyssa, who had stayed the night at her house the previous night, because she and Candy's daughter, Jenny, were good friends. Okay, back to me. Remember, despite Alan and Candy ending their affair, up until this point, no one else knew anything had ever happened between them. Their children had become fairly close, which required the two former lovers to still be in contact from time to time. But from what I can tell, Alan had remained faithful to Betty in the months since, and he and Candy basically avoided each other and played nice when they had to interact. And I said 9 months while ago. I'm remembering back to when I was reading. I think that was more like 7 months.
Okay.
I think it was 7 months. I don't know if it matters now, but anyways, on the drive there, Jenny was begging her mother to let Alyssa stay over one more night, which Candy normally would not agree to, but Alyssa had found out the Montgomerys were going to the theater to watch The Empire Strikes Back.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Which was just opening. Yeah.
Cool.
And she wanted to go as well. Of course she did.
Started off on Hoth and they had to cut the tauntaun open.
Yep.
Yeah. Sad scene. It was sad. I didn't like it when I was a kid.
Is that when he had to crawl in and stay warm?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Sacrifice tauntaun.
This This would add one more chore to her day, as Alyssa had a swim lesson that afternoon, and she would have to be driven to that by Candy now. But Candy finally relented. She got the kids to church and started out the day's events for Vacation Bible School. She taught the morning lesson and helped make lunch mid-morning. She told a friend of hers, a lady named Barbara, that she was heading over to Betty Gore's place to grab Alyssa's swimsuit for her swim lesson later. And then she was going to stop by Target to buy a Father's Day card, but she would be back to church in time for the after-lunch puppet show. Well, that all sounds wholesome, doesn't it?
I didn't know they had Target back then. I thought Target was newer than that. But I'm not doubting you. It's just something. Maybe it wasn't in our area.
I see Sam going at it. Was Target around in 81? 1980?
I believe you. I believe you that it was.
Oh, it must have been around way before, because his face is like, what?
1902.
What?
What? Boy, was I close. You need to know any history about retail. I'm your guy.
1902? It predated Titanic by 10 years. Oh, my God.
Well, so I missed it by a few years.
Oh, my God.
Looks like I'm just a human, guys. I really don't think it was in the our area until like the 80s or 90s, like mid-80s.
And then Sam says it was founded in Arkansas.
Minneapolis.
Oh, yeah. Minnesota. But yeah, she just had errands to run, you know, but she said she was going to be back for the puppet show that was going on after lunch. So it was around 10 a.m. when Candy left the church to do these errands, so she would have had plenty of time to get back. However, when the puppet show started, Barbara was surprised to see that Candy was not back yet. When she did finally return, the puppet show was coming to a close. When Barbara asked if everything was okay, Candy replied, "I went down to Betty's and we just got to talking. And then I looked at my watch and I thought I had time to go to Target to get the Father's Day cards, but I drove all the way to Plano. But when I got there, I realized my watch had stopped and I was late, so I didn't even go in. We're taking Alyssa with us tonight to see The Empire Strikes Back. That reminds me, I'll go check on the kids."
I can clear it all up right now.
Okay, the Target?
Yes. Banker and real estate investor George Draper Dayton incorporated Target in 1902 as Goodfellow Dry Goods.
Okay.
The following year, the name was changed to Dayton Dry Goods Company and then shortened to Dayton Company. On May 1st, 1962, they opened their first Target store. So okay. 1962 is when the first actual Target store was opened.
All right.
But it originated in 1902.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, now we know.
I love to learn stuff like that.
I do too.
To me, it's like when you learn something, then when you're driving around and you see a Target. I don't say it to my family anymore because it's not good. But I think to myself, oh, Target 1962. I learned that one time.
Yeah.
Sam taught me that.
And now
I'm just thinking that to myself, and that's just a pleasant little history thought that I had to myself.
Well, they're going
to
revamp it into like a more upscale. It's going to be Target, I think.
Oh, Target.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I call it sometimes.
That's what my sister-in-law used to work there, and she was like, no, it's Target. We're upscale, as a joke. But hey, there's an episode you've ever listened to, the John Glasgow episode, Sam. It was a way old one. One of the first maybe 15 episodes we did.
Dillard's?
Yes. Yeah. We learned all about the Dillard's was founded in like Little Rock or somewhere in Arkansas.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And yeah, John Glasgow had a big part in that. But anyway, and then he disappeared and they found a skull a long time later.
Hey, you know what's crazy?
What?
The first Target store, like I said, was May 1st, 1962. Mm-hmm. First Walmart, July 2nd, 1962.
Whoa.
So Target was 2 months basically before Walmart.
Wow.
Oh, that's crazy.
When was Kmart? When was the first? Remember Kmart?
Well, yeah.
Remember Kmart?
Who has the joke about that? Is it Nate?
Maybe
Nate
Bergotsky
has that about the Kmart?
It just felt weird. A Kmart just felt weird. It's just almost Walmart, but it was just weird.
Ghetto Walmart.
Yeah. It was like Always Save Walmart or like Best Choice Walmart.
It really was.
Very weird. It's like coming to America, McDowell's.
Oh, that, I was just thinking about that.
No, they
That's
got
funny.
The Big Mac. We got the Big Mick. You know, it's just like...
That's funny.
1962.
You're shitting me.
No.
So every business ever started in 1962, ever.
That was the, so if you the ever year played, of the department store.
Yes.
If you ever go on Jeopardy and they say department store open, you better say, what is 1962? If you don't have no clue.
Because that's a 90% chance.
Yeah, you got a good shot.
Before 1962, every store was like that little wooden, dusty, empty shack that like Teddy goes in. Or who was it? Which one of them in Stand By Me collects the money and goes in?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They're all kind of like a Five and Dime, probably.
Yeah, yeah. It was every store was just
or
like
the,
that.
The Walsworth from A Brother Where Art Thou?
Yeah.
And stay out of the Walsworth.
Piggly Wiggly.
Oh, yeah, or the Piggly Wiggly.
Can you see when that first opened? My God, if it's 1962, I'm shitting my pants
gotta be
on air.
That. Please, God, let it be before 1962.
Speaking of comedians.
I'm on Sam's couch. What?
Mitch Hedberg, wasn't it? He walked into Target, but he missed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my
Tried
God.
To walk into Target, but I missed.
1916.
Oh, yeah. At first, it was like
1916. Yeah. Yeah, because you're right. The Piggly Wiggly was around in the 40s and 50s. And,
yeah.
Because
yeah.
I've even heard, like, even those old movies, like, well, I just got to run down to the Piggly Wiggly.
Yeah.
Buy myself some henna rinse for my hair. That's a Lucille Ball reference that no one will get. But anyway.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Extra, extra. Dawn of Mantis now has a merch store. There are t-shirts, long and short sleeve, as well as hoodies. Just go to dawnofmantis.com and click the t-shirt link.
Dawn of Mantis is brought to you by Redbeard Sound. Redbeard Sound provides music production, audio editing, and live sound engineering, and is where Dawn of Mantis records our podcast. You can find Sam's information on our website, dawnofmantis.com, or at redbeardsound.com.
Quiet your mind.
Okay, so Candy got, this is after she finally gets back to church, right? She's late, but mm-hmm. she finally gets back. Candy got her kids and Alyssa all together and went back to the Montgomery's home. From there, she phoned her husband at his work and reminded him to cash a check to get some cash so they could all go to the movies later, Empire Strikes Back, and ended the conversation by asking Pat if he knew where Alan was. And like she hadn't even brought Alan up. Pat was kind of like, Alan Gore? No, I don't. Why? Candy said, forget it, not important. And she hung up. So that was a little weird. So speaking of Alan, let's go back to him. He had been fairly busy that same morning as well. He'd left the house early to embark on a business trip, which was rare these days at his new job, but his company had scored a big contract with the 3M Corporation up in Minnesota, and Alan, along with two of his colleagues, needed to personally make sure the company's new message switching system was properly installed and working. Strangely, though, Alan had not been able to reach Betty since around noon, which never happened. Despite how much Betty hated being home alone, she still barely ever left the house. So several unanswered phone calls later, Alan was growing uneasy. Betty had not wanted him to leave, and she had even had a mini breakdown that morning. But they'd had a long talk, and she was in good spirits when he left. He reminded her that the very next week they were going on a vacation to Europe without the kids, and that was something she was very excited about.
Mm.
So it's all good. All good that morning. When Alan and his coworkers reached the airport, he found a payphone and called the house again. No answer. He hung up and called again. No answer. Maybe Betty had taken baby Bethany for a stroll in the neighborhood.
Boy, that's a mouthful.
Yeah.
It's a tongue
nice
twister.
Nice job on that, yeah. By the way.
Thank you, sirs.
Rolled right off your tongue.
I'm going to take a drink of Dr. Pepper after that.
You deserve it. Take two drinks if you would like, sir.
He tried to put his mind to rest, but throughout the flight to St. Paul, he was worried about Betty. As soon as he made it to his hotel room, he called the house again. The phone rang and rang. He let it ring like 15 or 16 times, in fact. Wanting someone to check the house, Alan hung up and dialed their next-door neighbor, a real estate agent named Richard Parker. Alan asked if he'd go next door and check on Betty, and he waited on the line while Richard ran next door and beat on their front door. A minute later, he heard Richard's voice once again. No answer, Alan. She must be out. Next, Alan called Candy Montgomery. He asked if she'd seen Betty, and she said, yeah, she had. She explained how she went there around 11 a.m. to get Alyssa's bathing suit and said Betty was absolutely fine when she left. Then Alan called Richard, the neighbor, again and asked if he'd go back again and look and see if their cars were there or not. Richard said yes. He came back a moment later and said, yes, the garage doors open and one of the cars are gone. Now Alan was near panic. Maybe the baby had gotten ill and Betty had to rush out. He called the local hospital and the local PD. They hadn't heard from or seen Betty. Next, Alan called Candy again, who reassured him that Betty was probably just out doing something and not to panic. But it was too late for that. Alan called Richard a third time. This time, he made Richard go into the garage and try to get in. When Richard returned to the phone, he sounded troubled. Okay, first off, both cars were there. He had only just kind of half-assed looked over the fence earlier and just had not seen the second car. So both cars are there. But he did say something felt wrong. Everything was open. All the lights in the house were on. All the shades are up. But no one was answering the door.
Oh, no. That's not good.
Next, Alan called another neighbor, Jerry McMahon. He explained the situation and asked if Jerry could make his way into the house and to get into the house, whatever he had to do. Before Jerry went over to the Gore house, he fetched yet a third neighbor, a barber named Lester Gaylor. As Jerry and Lester entered the lawn in front of Alan and Betty's house, they were joined by Richard, who was holding a large keychain. See, Richard was a realtor, like I said, and he had actually sold the Gores their home a few years prior, and he thought he might still have a key on that big chain.
Hmm.
The three approached the front door, and Richard gave the knob a turn. The door swung open. It was never even locked, so no one had tried it up to that point. It was a little after 11 p.m. now, so it's late. It's late into the night. The men slowly entered the house, calling Betty's name. The first thing they could hear, the only thing, was the muffled sound of a crying baby. Lester exclaimed, "Oh my God, the baby," as they followed the sound into the second bedroom where they found little Bethany sitting in her crib. Her hair was tangled, and she was covered in her own waste.
Hmm.
Yeah, she had cried for so long her little voice was hoarse. Richard cradled her to his chest and ran back to his house to call the police. At the same time, I guess it was Lester, was still checking rooms and finding nothing. What he did notice, though, was a foul, pungent odor towards the back of the house. Now, remember now, it's been about 12 hours since anyone has known of or heard from or seen Betty. Lester made his way into the kitchen first and opened the utility room door before slamming it shut immediately. Before Jerry, who was still there, could ask what it was, Lester turned around as white as a ghost and muttered two words, "She's dead." In disbelief, Jerry stepped around him and peeked into the door. Betty was lying face up on the floor, every inch of her covered in blood. Her face was half gone. There were large pools of dark, congealed blood all around her. In a cruel twist of irony, the phone began to ring at that moment. Knowing who it was, Jerry answered. Alan's frantic voice came over the line. "What did you find?"
Hmm.
Jerry, sharing a horrified look with Lester, answered, "It's not good, but don't worry, the little one is okay." When Alan asked about Betty, Jerry could only say, "I'm sorry, Alan, she's been shot." They assured him that the police were on their way and that they would stay on the scene and help however they could. In shock, Alan called Candy again and told her the terrible news. It's weird that he keeps calling Candy.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, they had a pretty strong bond and relationship. I mean, it is strange, but I guess I can see it.
I guess so, too. As I was writing this, I was just like, don't you have friends, family, or like other people? Why do you keep calling this gal that you had the affair with?
Yeah. Well, I mean, family friend, too, sort of.
Yeah.
I mean, church.
And, yeah, you're right. They did have a really strong bond, and I guess he broke that to repair his marriage. But I guess maybe at the first sign of like trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Or I don't know what you would call it. Tragedy or something.
Sure.
The first person he thinks to turn to would be Candy.
Yeah, I guess so.
Maybe there was still a little something there or something.
Sure. Yeah, I would imagine there's always something there to some degree, right?
Yeah, that's just weird to didn't even think about the how many times he called her. But it probably didn't look good.
No.
Considering what they found out later, that he had called her that many times that day.
Yeah. That's crazy.
But I don't know. I think in a lot of cases, when it's over, it's over. But sure. Obviously, in this case, maybe it wasn't.
But, I mean, you couldn't, unless you were going to make that public, it couldn't be over totally. Or else someone would say, "Hey, why don't they ever talk anymore?"
Oh, yeah.
I wonder if something happened.
True, like, yeah.
So that's one of those cases that can't be over.
You're right. Yeah, they have to still be in each other's lives.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he called Candy again and told her the terrible news. Considering Betty's often fragile mental state, and her dark moods, Alan was kind of assuming that she'd killed herself at this point. And he suggested that to Candy, and then he asked her to keep Alyssa until further notice, and then he hung up the phone. The next morning, which was a Saturday, word of Betty's death began to spread like wildfire amongst the community and the church congregation. As the information leaked out, it was discovered that Betty had not been shot. She had been hacked to death with an axe. Also, a friend from church told Candy over the phone the police had found a bloody shoe print, the first link to Betty's killer.
Wow.
I bet Candy was relieved, huh? They're going to catch this person.
Yeah.
The following day, after Sunday morning service, Candy approached a fellow church member, an attorney named Don Crowder, and asked if they could speak privately. They went to a side room where Candy told Don that she was probably the last person to see Betty alive and that she was scheduled to speak with the police that afternoon. She wanted his advice on what to do, and Don assured her that it was just a common procedure, not to be worried. Mm-hmm. That afternoon, Candy met with Chief Abbott and Collin County Investigator Steve Deffenbaugh and told them her version of the events that day, the first version, that is. Okay, she said she picked up Alyssa from the Gore home on Thursday, took the kids to Bible school the next morning, left long enough to run a few errands, including stopping by Betty's just for a little bit to get the bathing suit, and then described the rest of her day all the way up to Alan's frantic calls later that night. When asked to go into her visit with Betty in more detail, Candy said she'd been there maybe 15 minutes, if that. Betty had been drinking coffee and sewing when she pulled up, and then she put her sewing down, and she and Candy went out in the backyard to pet the Gore's two Cocker Spaniels. Then they came back in, Candy fetched Alyssa's swimsuit out of the utility room, and she left. When asked what shoes she'd been wearing that day, Candy said, "My blue sneakers." Could she bring them into the police? She said, "Sure, no worries." When asked why she was late getting back to the church, she explained that her watch had stopped at around 10:15 a.m., and she'd lost track of time. Before they let her leave, Abbott asked if she'd come back for a hypnosis session. Maybe it could shake loose something she'd forgotten, and Candy agreed before leaving. Also, this is creepy, too. Remember that time that her
10:15?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a little creepy thing that creeps up later.
All right, cool.
The rest of that day, many people from the church, along with friends and family, gathered at the Gore home to help Alan and his two children in any way they could. Candy was one of those people, consoling the family and helping with the baby. People even remarked at how lovely and helpful Candy was. Sociopaths can be that way.
They can, if they want to be.
Yeah, they can be whatever you need them to be.
That's right.
As far as the investigation, as is always the case, Alan, the husband, was looked at first. But he really was in St. Paul at the time of the murder, and he seemed genuinely grief-stricken. So the police cleared him as a suspect pretty early on. But what they didn't know was that Alan had lied to them about something. Hmm. When asked if he had ever had an affair before, he said no. Now, this had actually bothered him since he got home from the PD that day, and later that evening, he called them back and told them the truth. He did have an affair, and it had been with Candy Montgomery. Obviously, the police now wanted to know every detail of the affair, so Alan went back to the PD the next day for another interview. They now had someone with a motive. Candy had not been thrilled that their affair was over. They grew even more suspicious when Alan revealed that, according to others at the church, Candy had been gone way longer than she told the police she was gone that day. In fact, she was absent from the church throughout the exact window of time that Betty was thought to have been murdered.
Oh, that's not good.
Chief Abbott called Candy back in for fingerprints because they had found a bloody fingerprint at the scene on the freezer.
And did you bring them shoes in?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. I don't know, maybe they did. I thought it was like the next sentence. I was like, oh, that's perfect timing, Ivan. We'll get to that, I promise.
Okay, tell me when you want me to say that again.
Yeah. No, let's leave that in. That's perfect.
Now. Say that now.
The thing about the shoes, say it. Well, yeah, they wanted to compare the fingerprint, obviously, to Candy. Also, they had found a nail that had been broken off, and it was not one of Betty's. Police assumed it was the killer's. As Candy was questioned again, the detective tossed the fingernail on the table and said, "You killed Betty, didn't you?"
If the nail fits.
Candy surprised everyone by remaining eerily calm and replying, "No, I did not."
Mm.
Mm-hmm. The questioning wrapped
thought
up.
You nailed me, didn't you?
No! The questioning wrapped up, and Candy was asked to come back in the next day for a polygraph. She agreed and headed home, where she immediately called her attorney to talk in private. She told him everything about the affair with Alan and the questioning from the police. He assured her it would be okay, told her not to take the polygraph, and said he'd contact the ladies at church to verify Candy had been wearing the same clothes before and after the errands, which would help.
That would help.
Yeah, obviously whoever killed Betty would have been bathed in blood and they would have had to change clothes.
Sure.
Oh, for those of you wondering, Alan did take and pass a polygraph.
Okay.
So Alan's clean on this.
Okay.
Alan's clean. The next day, Candy met again with her attorney. He had learned that Candy had worn different clothes when she returned to the church that day.
Not good.
Candy had bad news of her own. Her shoe size, here's the shoes, damn it, Ivan, I knew it. I knew it was coming up. Her shoe size matched the bloody footprint. Oh, and her fingerprints matched too. Oh, and blood had been found in Candy's station wagon. With these damning pieces of evidence, Candy knew it was over. She looked at her attorney and she finally said it. I did it. I killed Betty Gore.
I'm such a good person for admitting it now that I have insurmountable evidence against me. Aren't you proud of me?
She admitted it, Your Honor. My client came clean when faced with a mountain of damning evidence that no attorney could get her out of.
So I beg of you to be lenient upon her. Because she's a good person. She's a murderer and an adulterer. But other than that, she's perfect.
Oh, you just wait.
Oh, there's more.
I hope you brought extra pants because you're going to shit your ones you're wearing when I tell you what happened at the end of this thing. I am not even kidding. I know Sam has extra pants because he lives here. But you and I don't, Ivan. So I hope you're ready. On the 19th, it was announced that Candy was an official suspect and everyone in Texas was now talking about the sordid love affair turned deadly. On Friday the 20th, 1 week after the murder, Candy was taken in for a physical examination. Multiple bruises were found on her legs and chest, as well as a cut just under the hairline on her forehead. And then after that, she was promptly arrested for the murder of Betty Gore.
Hmm.
People in the community were shocked, and most did not believe Candy was capable of murder. Pat, however, was growing suspicious. He'd noticed those bruises on her legs a week ago, and she'd said she'd bumped into the dishwasher. Multiple times, I guess.
What a bad cover. I bull rushed it like a linebacker. That's crazy.
Did you bump, let me hear, how many bruises? You bumped into the dishwasher 9 times?
Yeah. Let's get a new dishwasher. That one's violent.
He had also asked her what happened to her favorite sandals. He hadn't seen them in a week. Now we're finally addressing the shoes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
She said she just tossed them out, right? That was strange, though. She refused to talk about anything else concerning the case with Pat. When he asked her to explain the fingerprint that matched hers, she said she wasn't supposed to talk about it. Meanwhile, police were looking for the clothing that Candy had been wearing before she went to Betty's, and they couldn't find it. What they didn't know was that Candy's attorney, Don Crowder, had placed them in a bag and given them to an associate to hide.
Mm.
It's almost like...
That's not something Matlock would do. I just thought I'd point that out. That's not an honest lawyer.
Nor... Who was the old school? Perry Mason.
Perry Mason.
Yeah, Perry Mason wouldn't have done it neither.
No, I can't represent you. Making me hide clothes.
Miranda, I have to be ethical and honest. If you want me to lie, you're just going to have to find someone else.
Yes. Yes, lawyers don't lie.
Enter Jim Carrey.
That's right.
Liar, Liar is such a good, movie.
It's so good.
Candy had been released on bail, and shortly after, she and her attorney flew to Houston to meet Mr. Fred Fasson for a session of hypnosis. In the following hours, Dr. Fasson pulled all kinds of childhood memories out of Candy, and he was satisfied that he had found the source of Candy's rage, the trigger that had made her snap that fateful day that Betty was murdered.
It wasn't just that the guy left her? Or didn't stay with her?
Oh, no, you'll be amazed when you find out what they said it was.
Oh, yeah, you said that already.
It's so... ridiculous.
Okay.
I mean, in my opinion.
Redonkulous, even?
Yes, even that.
Okay.
They also finally got the full story of that day's events from Candy.
Okay.
It's like the real events. They arrived back home from Houston with a strategy, one that began with something that shocked everyone. The trial of Candy Montgomery began in October of 1980. Don Crowder started things off with a bang when he announced that his client was pleading not guilty because she had been forced to kill Betty in an act of self-defense.
Okay. Huh.
Eventually,
I don't see Betty being violent like that.
A mother at her home with her baby, like the Cocker Spaniels in the backyard. I mean, yeah, okay.
Well, yeah.
She won on the attack.
We'll get the full story.
Okay.
You'll get the full story. Yeah. Eventually, Candy herself took the stand and finally told the courtroom, who were hanging on her every word, what really happened that day, or her version of what happened. Since the other person who was there, Betty Gore, was obviously not able to share her side, The story went as follows. Candy figured Betty had just laid the baby down for a nap and wanted to relax because she said Betty looked annoyed when she answered the door that day. Candy said, "Betty, I have a special favor to ask you. The girls wanted Alyssa to go see the movie with us tonight. I told them that if it's okay with you, it's okay with me, and I'll be happy to take Alyssa to her swimming lessons to save you an extra trip." Betty said that was fine and invited her into the house. Betty then offered her some coffee and said, "Candy, if you're going to take Alyssa to the swimming lesson, remember that she doesn't like to put her face under the water. So when she does put her face under the water, be sure to give her a peppermint afterwards for a reward." That's the system they had. Candy agreed and then told Betty she was running late and would probably go ahead and grab Alyssa's bathing suit and get out of there. It was then that she noticed a change in Betty. She looked sternly at her and asked, "Candy, are you having an affair with Alan?" Candy said, "No, of course not." Betty replied, "But you did, didn't you?"
Direct questioning.
"You little hoa," what she said.
Hoer.
Candy admitted, yeah, she had, but assured Betty that it had been over for quite a while. Ignoring her, Betty got up and left the room for a few moments, and when she came back, she was clutching the handle of an axe in her hands.
Whoa.
Everyone keeps an axe in their utility room.
Yeah.
She looked coldly at Candy and growled, "Well, don't see him again." "Under the circumstances, I think I'll just bring Alyssa home and drop her off right after Bible school," Candy replied. Betty fired back, "No, I don't want to see you anymore. Just keep Alyssa and take her to the movies because I don't want to look at you again. Bring her home tomorrow." So that was weird. It's like, "I don't want to see you again. I'll see you tomorrow."
Yeah.
I'm gonna kill you if I see you again. Here's $6 if she wants some ding-dongs or something at the...
"And don't forget movies. About the peppermint reward." "Or this axe is going to come at you."
It is weird, yeah.
Yeah.
After saying that, Betty laid the axe against the wall and walked past Candy into the middle of the living room and said, "I'll get a towel from the bathroom. You get Alyssa's suit off the washer."
Nonchalantly.
Be like, "Weren't you just holding an axe at me?" As Candy grabbed the swimsuit, Betty appeared again. "Don't forget Alyssa's peppermints." You literally just said that.
But I wish she was holding the axe when she said it. Somebody holding an axe talking about peppermints, that's awesome. I love it.
Candy said she had some already and needed to go. Betty handed her some anyway. "Take the goddamn peppermints." Betty reached into a bowl of candy by the fireplace. "I'll give you a few of these anyway." As Candy stuffed the swimsuit and the towel into her handbag, Betty gave her the handful of candies. She dropped those in there as well. As Candy got up to leave, both women shared a glance. A long look, really. Betty's face filled with pain and anguish. Candy's filled with regret and shame. That's when Candy placed a hand on Betty's arm and offered one final heartfelt apology. She said, "Oh, Betty, I'm so sorry." That's when, according to Candy, Betty's face turned from hurt to rage. She spun around, grabbed the axe, and lunged at Candy. "You can't have him! You can't have him! I'm going to have a baby, and you can't have him this time!" she screamed. Then, as Candy pleaded for Betty to stop, the two women wrestled over the axe, making their way around the kitchen, knocking things off the shelves and overturning chairs. When there was any space between them, Betty would swing the axe. Candy was able to dodge the blows, causing it to poke deep gashes into the linoleum and the counters.
That's her dodging. That's the sound. like ninja stuff.
Then, when the axe finally made contact and nicked her toe, Candy's intense fear turned into rage.
No one hurts my toe.
I just got a pedicure.
I couldn't think of anything to say, really.
She was now filled with a rage that even rivaled that of the scorned woman she was battling.
A lot of rage that day.
Just imagine two housewives in like 1980s dresses with probably poofy sleeves and oversized glasses just going at it over an axe. Mm-hmm. Just crazy.
Yeah, oh yeah.
As they struggled, Betty momentarily lost her balance and fell to the floor, leaving Candy holding the weapon. Without a second thought, she brought the axe up with both hands and brought the blade down on the back of Betty's head. It made a sickening and dull thud against the back of Betty's skull, and she dropped to the floor. Thinking she had incapacitated her, Candy dropped the axe and bolted for the door. This is how Candy told it, okay? But as she was about to grab the handle, she felt a hand on her shoulder. It was Betty, her face now more full of rage than ever and covered in fresh blood.
It just reminds me of Austin Powers. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but the part where he's like, "Why won't you die? Why won't you die?"
Yeah, she's just, it's like a Stephen King movie at this point, yeah. The way she's telling it.
It's kind of like feels like the Grudge kind of, you know, it's like you run away but it's still right there.
Yeah. And she's really like, she's just got a chop to the back of her skull and she's going to like chase you out the door. I don't know, man.
That axe to the back of the head just made her more mad.
Never hit a housewife in the back of the head with an axe.
No.
Candy said, "Let me go, Betty, please let me go." Betty's hollow voice replied, "I can't." That's what is according to Candy.
Yes, you can.
You can. It's really easy.
Just let go.
Yes, I can.
If you love something, you got to let it go sometimes.
Like what? I don't love you.
What was that from? Yes, I can. What was that from?
Nutty Professor.
Yes. Yes, I can. I knew it. Okay.
Sherman. Sherman, come on. Stay right now.
Yes, I can. Is this the nice ass section? Everyone here has a nice ass. Is this the nice ass section? That's okay. Go on. I had two titties. Now I had six. That's multiplication.
You know who the comic was on that, don't you?
Chappelle.
Yeah.
I heard of dreadlocks, but shitlocks. Yeah, that was great, man. I love that. Thanks for bringing in the professor. That's a first.
You said it. I'd heard it before, but it didn't process where it come from. But then when Joe guessed it. Anyway. Oh, no, he didn't guess it.
I had to ask. I feel terrible about that.
Yes, I can.
Candy grabbed the axe again. And as the women struggled around the room, they were slipping in the pools of blood running out of the back of Betty's head. Still, though, she was able to briefly regain control of the axe. Candy begged one last time. "Betty, don't," she said. "Please let me go. I don't want him. I don't want him anymore."
But wait a second.
Yes.
I thought they saw nothing until they went to the very back room.
Yeah.
Like she's acting like they
were all over the house.
Yeah.
I didn't catch that. Yeah. Yeah. Cause she said she ran through the kitchen and grabbed her as she tried to leave. That's a good catch. I didn't get that. But yeah. You know, they had crime scene photos of the whole area.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. The kitchen would have had to have been, I literally just said they were slipping in pools of blood in the kitchen. Again, Candy said, "Betty, please don't. Please let me go. I don't want him." Betty placed a bloody finger to her lips and whispered, "Shh."
Now, listen. It's going to be over in just a minute.
This is important.
Okay.
This is what set something off inside Candy. This is what made Candy snap.
Oh.
The shushing.
Okay.
Oh.
Yes.
Not all the things that happened before.
No.
Not the. Yeah.
Just don't go, shh.
Right.
That's disrespectful, though. I get that.
With every ounce of strength she could muster, Candy ripped the axe from Betty's hands, struck her to the floor, and started blindly chopping. What?
I'm just getting the picture. You know, it was in Betty's back of her head, so she had to reach behind her, ripped it out of her skull to be holding it again.
I don't know. I don't know if it was stuck in the back of her head.
Oh, you think maybe she just...
I don't know. It never really said. Well, it does say later that of the wounds, it looked like one of them in her skull, it looked like the axe had been wiggled back and forth to be pulled out. So it did get stuck. But I don't know if that was the initial... My God, now you got me like all freaked out. So she's attacking her with this thing out of...
pulls the axe out of her own head.
That's badass.
And now she's holding an axe with one hand, shushing with the other.
Yeah.
And that's what set Candy off.
Yeah.
Yeah, because at that point, it's pretty even, right?
Yes.
Axe to the back of the head, finger to mouth. I mean, they both had their things, right? That's equal, being shushed and having an axe in the back of your head.
Yeah.
Both disrespectful acts.
Completely.
Yeah. See, she's fully warranted. What you guys are talking about. You're on the wrong side of this one, boys.
Hey, well, yeah, we'll get to it very short. This is the last. We're going to get to it. This is the last page. So, yeah, she shushes her. Betty shushes Candy. Candy freaking freaks out, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. As as anyone would.
As anyone would. So she grabs the axe, and she just starts hacking. Do you know how many times she hacked Betty? 41.
Oh.
41 times. All but one strike, according to the experts, were while Betty Gore's heart was still beating. You could hear a pin drop in the courtroom when Candy was finished. It was a powerful testimony. Crowder then walked the jury through what he and Dr. Fasson had discovered throughout Candy's hypnosis sessions. Candy had been traumatized as a child, namely by her mother. And when Candy had wanted to cry out in pain, her mother had shushed her. And that was their ace in the hole.
What?
I swear to God. I swear to Christ. That was it. That was the thing that sent Candy into a rage that day. The thing that caused her to kill Betty Gore. My mom shushed me once.
If she had been hit by gamma rays, that would be her thought to turn her into the Hulk. She'd just have to, yeah. That's all Iron Man would have had to do. Shh. Hulk smash.
Yeah, that was it. That was their if the glove doesn't fit moment.
Wow. You'd think a public defender or a lawyer could have been like, hey, Candy, we need to talk about that thing.
I can think of a wackier one.
Okay.
We might do this in an episode someday, but Harvey Milk.
Okay.
He was the first gay elected official in San Francisco back in the 70s or maybe 80s.
Okay.
There's a fantastic movie called Milk, and it stars Sean Penn. It is great. He was murdered by a fellow, I think it was like maybe a San Francisco city council member or something. The guy's name was Dan White.
Okay.
And I swear to you, Dan White, he was found not guilty. They call it the Twinkie defense.
Okay.
I'm not joking.
He still is Twinkie?
I can't remember the details, but it was something about him like not having enough sugar intake or something that day that it like messed with his blood sugar and messed with his cognitive ability. It's something along those lines. But it's gone down in history as the Twinkie defense, and it worked.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, Dan White walked. It worked.
It's along those lines of the don't talk to me before I had my first cup of coffee. And it's like, yeah, I mean, you can still talk to people.
Yeah, that happened.
Blood sugar got low. Well, then you should be locked up forever because your blood sugar at times will dip. And we can't just have you out there killing people every time that happens. So you're still guilty and we're still going to lock you up because that's the whole point of,
exactly.
And, you know, we're not trying to rehabilitate you. We're trying to keep you from the general public. We're going to do that again.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. It was, we need to look that up sometime. It was something to do with Twinkies and sugar and something like that. But I just remember being blown away by the Twinkie defense. So this is the shush defense.
Okay.
We'll call it that. Yeah, Candy pled with the jury, and she said she did not mean to kill Betty with an axe after hitting her 41 times. And when she saw the murder weapon, Candy hid her face and begged him to put it away. I can't look at it. No. That's what she said.
Shh. No, don't say that! She jumps over the thing and grabs it.
The jury was properly flabbergasted, but not in the way that you'd think. After, okay, here it is. Here's the shit your pants moment. I promised earlier.
Oh, no.
After less than 4 hours of deliberation, the jury returned a verdict. Not guilty. Candy Montgomery was a free woman.
It worked?
It worked.
It 41 worked. Times?
41 times in self-defense.
Oh, my goodness.
It worked. It worked. That's the end of the, that's it. That's all. It worked. And that's just how that happened. It's done.
And no one shushed her ever again.
I do. I'd have a little bit, I have a follow-up. Alan Gore remarried not long after the trial, but that ended in divorce. Bethany and Alyssa, who are now, their mother is gone, which is freaking horrible. They were raised by Betty's parents. Now, I'm not sure why they were not raised by Alan, but it's, from what I found, they were raised by Betty's parents. Candy and Pat left Texas after the trial, and she started going by her maiden name. Unsurprisingly, she does not grant interviews.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so that's how that went.
Well, that's awesome. Dang! I'm surprised, but not surprised. There's a lot of morons out there, but it's man.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I could see it if she hit her once or whatever.
Yeah. No,
she hit her once before that.
Yeah. I was talking about this with my wife and we said the same thing, like one or two whacks, if you will, would have some grounds for self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
41 though? 41. Like, she had a good little while to decide, like, this is enough. And she didn't decide that until 41.
Yeah, I'm blown away. I mean, it is a crap-your-pants moment. You're right.
See? Thank you.
Yeah. You know, something else she did super cruel. She knew the baby was in there, and it would be in there for hours.
Mm.
She knew that.
It was for, like, 12 hours. That's so terrible. Just think 12 hours. 12 hours! That poor little baby was just in there, man. That, like, that, oh my God, that's, just, go ahead.
She didn't even report it. That, like, how do you end up getting off?
Yeah.
When you did it and didn't report it, and, like.
You would think the affair and the fact that she killed her, that would almost be enough without any other details, you know?
Yeah.
But then the fact she didn't report it, the 41 times.
Leaving the baby. All things to work against her.
Yeah.
I'm starting to think she might be a big jerk.
Well, I don't know much about premeditation. I think it was a spontaneous act. But what do you call it after, like when they make conscientious efforts to cover up? Because I don't remember.
Yeah.
I can't remember if I put it in the notes or not. But those green sandals, she had taken gardening shears after she heard that they had found bloody footprints. She had taken gardening shears and like scarred up those rubber sandals.
Yeah.
So they couldn't, you know, like they couldn't do a test to see if they matched or something. And all this other stuff. She went home, took a shower, changed her clothes. She did all this stuff to cover it up. I don't know, man. I just.
Wow.
So that's it. Rest in peace, Betty Gore.
Yeah.
I hope people understand. I think people understand. I think people that listen to us are smart enough to understand that we're not over here like, she got murdered. Like, we're not laughing at that.
No.
We're laughing at the absurdity of Candy believing
that
thinking that people would believe this crazy story that she'd made up.
That's right. Yeah.
So, yeah.
But apparently they did.
They did.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's it. Part two of Betty Gore is done.
Yeah. It's a good one, Joe. Good find, Sam.
Yeah. This was all Sam. Yeah. I just got a text from Sam's like, you ever heard of this? And I was like, I'm really shocked when I find one I haven't heard of. And I said, let me see if I can scrape an episode out of this. And by God, there was two. So thank you, sir. On our next episode, I'm really, really excited to talk about a Canadian stuntman, the Mad Canadian, Ken Carter.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Oh, yeah. That's what we'll be talking about. And we'll be drinking a lot of Canada Dry while we're talking about it.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, so anyway, yeah. Stay tuned for that. Thank you guys for listening. We really appreciate it. And you guys, you have a good day now. You hear?
Let me tell you about some fellas I know named Ivan, Sam, and Joe. They got themselves a little podcast, you know. And they talk about everything under the sun that they find interesting, spooky, or fun. And they sure ain't trying to impress no one.
remedy to too much time on your hands is take a little listen to the Dawn of Mantis.
We talk about killers, monsters, and cults. French mates from hell, disappeared folks. Occasionally throw in a few dad jokes. They try to make every story extra nice by adding their own ginger spice. Not one time or two, but thrice.
The remedy to too much time on your hands is take a little listen to the Dawn of Mantis.
Now I'm sure these fellas will be around for quite a spell. There sure ain't no shortage of stories to tell. Is this old world's as weird as hell? But hell, even if nobody listened, you know they'd maintain a fine disposition. Cause shooting the breeze is kind of their mission.
The remedy to too much time on your hands is take a little listen to the Dawn of Mantis. Too much time on your hands is take a little listen to the Dawn of Mantis.